Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special bonus episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Lanides, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. On the episode today, we are talking with Raymond the Real Deal Daniels, the Bellator fighter. He's such a great guy. I really enjoyed talking with him. We talk about his MMA debut, which happened all the way back. Little known fact, it took place all the way back in 2008 in Strikeforce. That's right. He made his MMA debut there against Jeremiah Metcalf, a 12-fight MMA veteran, so a very tall task in his initial bout. But he had been a long-time karate and kickboxing champion, a big, big star in that world. And so coming over to MMA was a big deal. This was coming on the heels of Kung Lee having all kinds of success within the sport. And so he made his debut at Melendez versus Thompson, the first fight between those two. And it didn't go the way that Raymond wanted it to, but we talk about that. We break the fight down. We also go into him getting back into kickboxing, returning to MMA just a few years ago, that insane 720 punch in Bellator in 2019, the highlight heard around the world. We get into all of that. We talk about potentially fighting Vander Real Deal Holyfield for the rights to the nickname and all kinds of stuff. So it's a great chat. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, on the line with us, we have Raymond the Real Deal Daniels on the show with us today. Raymond, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great this morning. How about yourself?
I'm good. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you're a busy man, a multi-time champion in sport karate and kickboxing, and now back in MMA. Touching on your background a little bit, your grandfather was a pro boxer. Your father was also involved in combat sports. So this is definitely in your blood. What does it mean to you to continue that family tradition?
Blessed with an ability. You know, it's a skill set that I got to see growing up in my family lineage and stuff. So it's amazing to have the opportunity to go on and display my skill set on such a, you know, a global stage like Bellator. So it's, you know, it's awesome. I feel like it's in my blood, to be honest, you know, and so that's why I think I'm able to go out and do things that most people aren't able to do because I've been doing it since I could walk.
Well, you're definitely a unique athlete with a unique skill set. You've had, and we want to delve further into your background. You had so much success in sport karate and kickboxing. You starred in Chuck Norris's World Combat League. You were undefeated there. You got a big win in K1 as well. In fact, you were 19-0 in kickboxing when you made your MMA debut in 2008. Before we get to the fight itself, what made you want to transition into MMA? Was it seeing a guy like Kung Lee have the success he was having? What made you want to get into a different sport?
Yeah, back in the day, it was amazing to see, you know, a fighter like Kung Lee, you know, compete. And he was able to use his martial arts skill set, you know, maybe like Stephen Thompson, there's a few people, rare people, but like Kung Lee was the one that really was the first one to really use his martial arts skill set and show the true beauty of what a martial artist looks like. I mean, he was using, I mean, from spin kicks to scissor takedowns. I didn't miss one of his fights. They were always so impressive to me. And, you know, it was one of those motivating factors, like, all right, well, let me go out and use, you know, my skill set. You know, Kung also had a background in wrestling a little bit, I believe, as well. You know, jujitsu, had an awesome sidekick when he was competing as well. Yep. So yeah, it was motivation for me to go out there and compete in it, but I didn't do the necessary steps in order to prepare myself.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about that. So let's talk about the hype for the fight. I mean, you're obviously from California, Scott Coker, longtime promoter in kickboxing and karate before he got into MMA. So it makes sense for you to sign with Strikeforce. Obviously, he'd had a lot of success with Kung Lee. He also had a guy, Brian Schwartz, who tried his hand at MMA and that didn't go quite as well. So he'd had, you know, kind of a mixed record with that, but he liked bringing in kickboxing guys and trying them out in MMA. And you came in with a lot of fanfare. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do want to read a portion of the press release announcing your addition to Strikeforce Melendez versus Thompson, which would take place in San Jose on June 27, 2008. It says, quote, already being hailed as the second coming of Strikeforce world middleweight champion Kung Lee Daniels, recognized as the number one sport karate fighter in the world, holds a 6-degree black belt in Kenpo and Shotokan karate, as well as a 5th-degree black belt in Taekwondo. Packs a thrilling, dynamic fighting style that is strikingly similar to Lee, also a guru of traditional martial arts. And you said, I'm going to give MMA fans something they've never seen before. I want to become the greatest fighter of all time. Anybody that steps in front of me is just going to be on my next highlight reel, an obstacle that's standing in my path to greatness. All right. So a mouthful. Obviously, you're being hyped to the heavens here. Did you feel a lot of pressure from being hyped so much? Do you think that affected your performance at all? Or was it just kind of, you were used to this kind of pressure?
No, it's a combination of things. Being a young man, in life, and as a fighter, you have no doubt. That's the one thing, if you want to be a mixed martial artist and a champion, you have to have absolute faith and confidence in yourself and belief in yourself. It was a lot of pressure to be able to be compared to somebody like, Kung Lee, who was an amazing champion, so that was, some pressure and stuff. I learned about at a young age, like, to not believe your own hype, so to speak, because I was this undefeated kickboxer. People were saying all these amazing things about me. And as a man, sometimes you start to believe those things, like, oh, yeah, I am awesome. I am going to just do this. And they're like, it's a true thing. And it's like, and I learned it was a very humbling experience for me, but it was a great experience that I wouldn't take back, because that happened to me that way. It allowed me to make sure that in life, I never went out and was unprepared for anything. So, no, it didn't necessarily get to me. I think I actually believed in it too much, what people were saying at the time. And thus, I didn't prepare myself properly to go out and perform at the best of my ability, and I think that was, the end result of what ended up happening in that fight. And that's why that happened that way.
Well, you're saying now that you weren't prepared. Did you feel at the time that you were ready? I would assume you felt like you were ready at the time. Oh. Did you feel like you were?
Oh yeah, definitely at the time. I mean, now I know I was not prepared at all, but I hadn't really familiarized myself with wrestling or with jiu-jitsu or anything. I was an undefeated stand-up striker. I saw a great example of, like, Kung Lee, like, oh, he's just going in here standing up and beating everybody up and knocking them out when he wants to. I'm just gonna go in there and do that and call it a day,
there you go.
It's funny to look back on it, it's one of those things in life where you do something and then you're like, oh man, you want to go back like that. Thus you saw my reemergence into kind of, the MMA world. But it's just definitely an interesting thing that happened to me at a young age. And, you have to learn, you have to grow, And I think it would be a total different. Even then, I didn't even fight in my natural. I just fought in my walk around weight class.
Oh, you didn't even cut weight.
Okay. I didn't even really, like, that's what I said. I didn't even know about cutting weight. And I just fought with whatever I woke up that morning.
So, all right. Well,
weight cutting, like, I don't even fight at 185 now.
Yeah. You fight at 170 now. Yeah.
Yeah. I've even fought up to 195 and back in WCL times, like, I fight at 170, but I didn't understand about weight cutting. I was just a martial artist and I'm a true martial artist. I wake up, I practice to fight world-class athletes every day. And as a martial artist, I wasn't prepared, meaning I didn't train properly, but if someone were to come up and attack me on the street and try and harm me or my family or my wife, I would be prepared to fight. I wouldn't be like, hold on, let me weigh in. Let me train for a week. I'd be ready to go. So when the opportunity presented itself to go and fight, I'm a martial artist. I'm ready. I'm prepared to fight at all times. And it was just that I didn't have enough skills and certain skill sets in order to be able to, to do what I'm currently doing now.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to ask, you did this little like dance movement thing. Do you remember, like, right before the fight started, do you know what I'm talking about? You did this like little shimmy thing and then like robot dance thing. Do you remember that at all?
I kind of remember a little bit of it. It was kind of like a little blur, but I think I remember doing like some, arm waves or something like that, just coming out, like trying to, like, I still come out and dance a little bit, I don't do it to that extent anymore. That was a little bit younger version of me doing it. Yeah. But, I like to try and find my vibe, find my energy, because it's when you fight, when you compete, as long as you're having fun, most people are going out and they're trying to fight and they're trying to compete. And the thing with me, when I go out, I'm actually just having a good time. I'm actually doing what I love. As you said, I'm a third generation. My father did martial art. I'm a second generation martial artist, but I'm a third generation fighter. My grandfather was a boxer. So this is just, it's a celebration for me more than I'm not necessarily going out trying to hurt my opponent. Most people think you go out and you want to hurt this person and put cause them pain. I just want to go out. I want to perform my skill set. I want to stop that person. But I don't want to cause any type of long-term damage, or I have no ill will towards that person. For me, it's more about the display of my skill set and and what I work at.
Yeah, and you want to entertain, and that's why you have guys like Exhibit rapping you to the to your fights and that sort of thing. Well, let's discuss the fight itself. You're a match with a very tough guy in Jeremiah Metcalf. I mean, he was 8-4, had already competed in Strikeforce. So, and I'll say real quick, you mentioned Kung. I've been, you know, the show, we're going through all the major Strikeforce events, and so I've watched every one of Kung's fights so far, and for whatever reason, Sammy Morgan, Tony Franklin, the guys he would fight, Frank Shamrock, the guys would stand with him, which I mean, he was a great wrestler. I mean, he had a strong wrestling background, and so he was able to shut guys off when they did try, but you know, that's obviously a big difference and them knowing that and all that stuff. So it was a little bit different with you coming in just straight striking. So definitely different, but they threw you into the deep end right away. I watched the fight a few weeks ago and then actually rewatched it this morning. Mm-hmm. Metcalf just never gave you a chance to really, I mean, you said you like to display your skills. I mean, he never gave you that chance. He clinched right away. You ended up grabbing a pretty good guillotine pretty quick. And then, you know, it was kind of over from there. And then he got into the second round. He clinched again right away, took you down. Were you surprised that he went kind of the obvious route and didn't really try to engage you on the feet, or did you think he'd give you kind of a fair shot and try you out on the feet?
Yeah, no, I when I went in there, I honestly thought that, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, most people have a little bit of a kind of a chip on their shoulder, or ego, so to speak. So they, you know, like, that's why I feel like sometimes when people were even fighting Kung, it's because Kung's wrestling was so good that people didn't try to take him down, and they would prefer to stand up fight with him, which didn't really make sense because they would get tired, I guess, you know, trying to wrestle him. Yeah. But I thought that he would want to try and stand up, like, oh, let me prove I can actually stand up fight, because that's what a lot of people do. Like, yeah. Oh, let me
Who's this kickboxer trying to come into my sport, basically?
Exactly. And so that was my thought process going in. Also, it's about just the people I surrounded myself with at the times and stuff like that. Because going into my first MMA fight, I believe he already had 12 MMA fights. He was 8-4.
That's right.
You don't really see too many people going into their very first MMA fight fighting somebody that has 12 MMA fights, like 8-4, with a lot of them being submissions. So that's also just, again, me understanding, you know, of having, you know, coaches or managers or just life experience, because that's not a fight that I should take for my very first fight. MMA, if you look at every MMA fighter, not one of them has probably fought somebody with 1200 times the fight experience in a particular sport you know what I mean, than they have. So that was also just a learning experience for me, you know what I mean. That was a life, you know, sometimes life lessons hit hard, and that was one that literally hit me hard. You know what I mean? So I wasn't surprised. I mean, it surprised me, obviously, when it happened. I was hoping, my thought was, is that he was going to try and stand up and fight with me and swing at me and stuff like that. So, you know, the fact that he did take me down was just, you know, a smart game plan from him and his coaches on his side, you know what I mean, of defense. So it was a very, you know, it was one of those, it felt like, I remember being in there and I remember it feeling like one of those dreams where you're like trying to run from something and you can't get away, or you're like, you know, or you're like stuck in something and you can't get out. And you're like, you ever had, like, in a dream, your arms are like tied to you and you can't push your arms away. So it was like one of those dreams.
Sounds like a nightmare. Jeez.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. It was basically a nightmare, you know, happening to me. And I remember just not having the knowledge of how to get up with somebody, say, mounted you. And I was just like, and he was hitting me, and I'm thinking, you know what? Fine. I'm just going to fight you from right here. And I just started trying to swing back from
which never works. Never works out.
Never. But in your mind, in that moment, it's working for you. You know? So, you know, obviously that didn't work out too well. But that, again, that's not necessarily lack of ability. It's more of lack of knowledge and understanding. And that's what, so I wasn't educated there. So because I wasn't educated, I set myself up for failure because I didn't educate myself properly. Now that's why I like a train over with Mark Munoz at Training Lab, with Coach Sam Calavita. So that way I've trained with people that are more experienced in life, that are more educated, that have been down that path before and are able to help me in a way that I was missing back then.
Well, Mark, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody better than Mark. I mean, high character guy and obviously very successful in MMA. So that's a good choice there. And I got to say, I mean, especially hearing all this from you, I got to fault your whoever your manager was at that time and your coaches. They should have never let you take a fight with. I mean, Kung didn't start off with it. He started off with Mike Alt, I think,
which is another stand-up kickboxer guy.
Yeah, exactly. He fought Brian Warren early on, who was somebody he'd already beaten in kickboxing. So, I mean, he was matched up very smartly. So very, very different approach. And obviously, you know, kind of paid the price for it. And it's funny. I mean, we're talking about this one loss and you've had so much success.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's okay. I don't mind it. For me, people always look at like, oh, you have these victories. You've done these cool knockouts. That one, you know, a couple of I only have a few defeats. There's only ever been able a couple people ever to get by me. But those were some of the biggest lessons to me. That was one of my, to be honest, like I don't like that happened, but I love that it happened because it was one of my biggest life lessons in order to teach me about the lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
And the lack of preparation and putting in the lack of having the proper people around you in order to direct you in life in a direction.
Yeah. You don't learn unless you lose. I mean, it's just kind of the way it goes. So
it's what it is.
Well, we'll get off this. I got a few more questions I want to ask, but you didn't fight again for quite a while. It looked like you're based on your record, you were out for about 3 years from any sort of competitive sports and you wouldn't compete in MMA again for 11 years. So kind of after that, you're like, screw this. I don't want to do this anymore. Or what was your thinking for taking that break and what made you decide to take that break before we get back into you coming back into combat sports?
So there was a break in there from me competing and stuff like that. One of the kickboxing leagues I was doing the WCL that stopped. And then I reemerged, I believe, in Glory.
Yep. Yep.
But during between that time, people don't know that I actually ruptured my Achilles tendon. So because I ruptured my Achilles tendon, that's at least 6 months to a year off. So when I ruptured it, I wasn't able to obviously fight or compete or let alone walk around.
Right,
Therefore that took some time off for competing for me. And then I was just focusing on, I was a single father at the time. So focusing on my son, my business and stuff like that. So it was a humbling experience in a lot of ways. I lost a fight. I had, it ended up rupturing my Achilles during between that time kind of. And so it was like a few different things in life of, you know, losing for one of the first time, then having a humbling experience where you're not able to walk around, you know what I mean? And just do. So I think it inspired me and improved my love for the game of martial arts and continue to learn. Then I started going and moving on and forward from there. And the reason why it took me a while to come back is just, I enjoy martial arts, but I never really enjoyed the grind of the wrestling and jiu-jitsu when I was a young man. It's just a different training session and different work ethic, you know, different bumps and bruises that you go home with on a daily basis. And I was kind of say the master craftsman in my craft already. So I kind of stayed in my lane. Thus I kept doing, the kickboxing and stuff like that. And then obviously ending up winning my world title there as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. You've gone 14-3 since getting back into kickboxing in 2011. You won the Pain and Glory 185-pound tournament. You became the Bellator kickboxing welterweight champion. What made you decide? So you last fought in kickboxing in 2018. Now it seems like you're full on in MMA. What made you decide to get back into MMA after being out of it for so long? Is it, you know, I had this loss, this sour taste in my mouth. I need to try this again. Or is it just natural progression of your skill set?
I think one, MMA has always been a natural progression of what my skill set was going to come to, but I'm a person that likes to rise to the top of whatever particular sport I'm in and then continue to move forward. If you were in my immediate circle and in my group, you would know that I was always going.
Sorry, go ahead.
All right, I got you. But my immediate group, people were around me, knew I was always going to go back and do MMA because that left that sour taste in my mouth. That was that, you know, that thing that happened to me in life that didn't say go the way that I want to. The first couple fights that I lost, when I lost a couple of those fights in MMA and kickboxing, were fights that I was just coming back. So I had to adapt my style from, because I used to move around a whole lot more. But that was all pre Achilles surgery. And so while those first five fights, I'm kind of learning how to reintroduce myself to fighting, even to training and different things. So I had to start to train, you know, obviously smarter, not harder, you know, so I wasn't able to run like I did. I wasn't able to do all the things that I was doing in the way that I was doing them. So I'm literally learning on the job again of how to do that. So, you know, it presented some problems, but again, great learning lessons helped me evolve. And then just going back to the MMA, I got a call from Scott saying, hey, you know, we love what you're doing in the kickboxing world. After I had won my title, and they wanted to be able to get me to do the things that I'm capable of doing and that they've seen me do over the years in the kickboxing arena in front of the large audience now that MMA has. So then that was my first MMA fight back, coming in Birmingham. And I was really excited to do it because not many people in life get to go back and correct. Imagine if you had a time machine and there was a moment in time that you can kind of go back and correct and fix it. And then I went to Birmingham, and that's when I had that 720 knockout that kind of went viral and stuff like that. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. I'm like, yeah, you guys don't realize that was 11 years of bent up, ready to get back to MMA. And I needed to respect that moment in life. I wasn't planning on it coming out like that. And it did. And it came out in a spectacular fashion. And it, I felt like it reintroduced me to the MMA world, because I didn't do it like I was meant to do it the first time, because I didn't prepare myself properly. I'm able to go out and do moves like that now because I have such amazing training partners and coaches now, you know, that give me the knowledge that I need in order to be successful.
Well, you kind of answered my next question. I wanted to talk about the 720, and I'll give you some quick background. I was, you know, we were doing the research for the Melendez versus Thompson card, and I see this Raymond Daniels guy, and I'm like, yeah, that name kind of rings a little bit of a bell. And so I start digging in my research. I'm like, oh, holy crap, this is the guy that did the 720 in Bellator last year. And I, like, you know, I let my coach, I'm like, have you seen, he hadn't seen it. I'm like, oh, you have to look this up. And he looked it up while we were recording the episode on that fight card. He was like, oh my God, you got to go back through and watch this like a few times, watch it in slow-mo and all this stuff. I mean, it was just amazing it's got to be one of the greatest KOs in history. And I'm sure you've talked about it a lot, but you gotta give us a little bit on that. You know, obviously very satisfying to redeem yourself as far as MMA goes, but talk us through the 720 just for a second. That was that something where you got in the air and you were, I mean, do you train that, or is that something you kind of got in the air and you're just looking for an opening and it just happened to be that straight right at the end of those rotations you went through?
Well, it is something that I actually trained. It's actually normally supposed to be like a kick that I actually throw, but it kind of didn't work out that way just because the distance that my opponent presented while I was in the rotation. But I threw a spin back kick to the liver, which is a kick that I know Kung like to throw, hit
absolutely. With spin absolutely. Kicks.
So I had the opportunity. People think, oh, you just come out and do that. We'll do that move again. It's like, if everything doesn't kind of like add up to the right moment in time, then you're not able to recreate that moment. I was able to hit him with a spin kick in the liver, which knocked him down. In kickboxing, normally that would have been a knockdown. He'd have got a 10 count, right? Or 8 count or whatever until he got up. But any shot to the liver makes it hard for a person to stand and to breathe. Mm-hmm. So I knew where I landed that shot, and I knew that my opponent was compromised, he was damaged, he was hurt. So therefore, now it's an opportunity to pull out, you know, a high risk move because, you know, he's limited on what he can do on his mobility, you know, and he's hurt. So as I started going into this 720 punch, I realized that he's actually had more room to move back. I thought he was already against the fence, but he pushes back against the fence. So I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss this kick. And if you miss, sometimes it can actually propel your body forward. As I go up, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be able to kick him because he's going to be too far. So I used my, when I landed, I used like a push drag and threw an overhand right in order to finish like closing the distance. And it just landed. So it landed perfectly. I couldn't, you know, you can't write a movie better and make an ending of the Karate Kid or the next Karate Kid better than, you know, a move like that. So it was kind of a, you know, it was a spectacular thing that I was just like, oh. I was actually doing that move during fight week, leading up to fight week. She was my fiance at the time, my wife now. When we get back to the room later that night, she was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you landed that. She's like, I gotta tell you. She's like, while you were doing fight week, she's like, you kept doing this, the 720. I kept doing it during training, as I was warming up for fight week and stuff. She was like, I was going to tell you, like, why don't you stop doing that freaking 720? It's not like you're going to go out there and do that during the fight. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I didn't say that to you because you would never let me live that down. She knows better. I would have definitely, I'd have made her eat her word for the rest of her life.
It was highlight reel, all over the world. Amazing. Nobody can ever take that away from you. Just a couple more questions and we'll let you go. Yeah, so definitely. What does the future hold for the Real Deal? Are you 100%? You haven't fought in kickboxing since 2018. Are you 100% MMA only going forward? Are you going to try to do both? Or where's your mindset when it comes to that?
Yeah, definitely. I still retain my kickboxing title. If anybody wants to challenge me on it, I'm definitely open to defending it. But right now, I'm obviously proceeding in the MMA field, in the MMA world. My goal is to rise to the top. I did it in pretty much every league that I've competed in. I did it in sport karate, WCL, did it in Glory, did it in Bellator kickboxing. Now I'm in Bellator MMA. So my goal is to rise to the top. And I don't come to a sport or venue to just do it. I come to be the best and to challenge the best. So that's what my goal is. My goal is to rise to the top, challenge the people that are top, and to win the Bellator MMA title. And then after I collect that, I'll have the kickboxing title and the MMA title. And then maybe before I retire, I'll call out whoever the boxing champion is and be the all sport, the triple champ or something like that. And actually be the real triple C, kickboxing. MMA and boxing.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, goals. Gotta have goals. All right.
You got to set them. That's the only way to keep moving forward in life.
There you go. All right. Well, I know you've got your gym in Orange, California, World Champion Karate, which can be found at wcckarate.com. You're also on Twitter and Instagram at @RD_goat. Anything else that you'd like to mention you have coming up? Any fights scheduled or any other projects that you want to mention?
No, I'm looking to get back in there coming up, hopefully in February or March or something like that. Get back in the MMA cage. If you guys are like my style, make sure you guys check out Evolution Fighting System, evolutionfightingsystems.com. And that's where I come out with my own fight. I have my own fighting style for sport karate. I'm in the process of working on my my pro series, which is going to be kind of like how I use my fighting style in MMA and how I've used it in kickboxing. So it's kind of like a hybrid fighting style. So if you've ever seen me fight, I fight a little bit different. So I'll be going over and showing all those moves of how I do them and how I perform them.
All right. Awesome. All right. One last question and we'll let you go. When you look back at that Strikeforce fight all these years later, what is the one single, I obviously learned multiple things, but what is the most important lesson and really like even from a life lesson perspective that you took away from that, that you feel is worthy of being shared?
I think one of the things is surround yourself with like-minded and great-minded people and people that are there to look out for you and motivate you because you don't know what you don't know until something happens to you. So surround yourself with people that are very knowledgeable in the field that you want. And I think that's one of the biggest things and biggest lessons that I've learned is to surround myself with people, like-minded people, so that way they can inspire me and continue to push me. And to all the young people out there in MMA, don't ever believe your own hype. You know, surround yourself with, make sure you be humble, be grateful for all the different blessings that you have, and don't forget to enjoy the ride.
All right. Well, I said one final question, but this one just popped in my mind. If the boxing thing, if it ever comes up, looks like they're talking about Evander Holyfield versus Mike Tyson. If Evander, you might see where I'm going with this. The battle of the real deals is if Evander ever came out and said, I want my nickname for myself, my own, just me. Would that be something you'd want to do?
Oh yeah, man. I'd go for the real. We could fight for the real deal name, the real deal title.
There you
No, but yeah,
go.
no. It'd be interesting to see if they come out and do it. It's an interesting time right now, I think, for boxing. That's why I think MMA is starting to take over. Boxing has always been the king of combat sports, but I think they're starting to be dethroned, to be honest, if you ask me. I think that's what MMA is doing, is dethroning boxing right now. Boxing is doing kind of more of the circus kind of show situations, you know what I mean? And no offense to all those, they're amazing legends and stuff like that, but right now they're trying to use their names of the amazing careers that they've had instead of creating new, legends and legacies for their sport. I think it, so even like the Floyd versus Connor, that was at least a match of champion versus champion of a crossover sport. So that was, but I think that was the catalyst that opened up, all these people that are not professionals that are going out and fighting on. I mean, look who was on the undercard of a Roy Jones and Mike Tyson fight. That would have never been an undercard of a real boxing match. Jake Paul and Nathan Robinson. For me, that's more of
A sideshow, a circus,
More of a circus thing, more of a sideshow type thing. And I think that and people are looking at it like, oh, they got a lot of views. But yes, this is the downfall. If you look at it right now, it's kind of, I feel like personally, if you're asking me, just my opinion, again, it's just an opinion. I think it's kind of like the downfall of boxing, and they're losing the prestige that they once had by allowing those type of fights to happen. Not the Mike Tyson and Jones fight, because I think that's something that you could do even with like MMA. It's like a legends event, you know what I mean, where you have some legends come out and spar, because they got a good, minute, 90 seconds, 2 minutes at the most, you know what I mean, that they can, see some glimpses of their greatness, you know what I mean. But I think, the sideshow stuff is the downfall of boxing.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with you on there. I mean, you have that at the top with Jones and Tyson. You know, they're saying that was the best-selling pay-per-view of all time, supposedly, and all that stuff. But it's not sustainable, and it's not something you could build on. And it's funny, like as I'm going through these events that Scott Coker put on, he's kind of known over the last several years for putting on the Tito fights and the, letting Ken come Shamrock come back and, different stuff like that. And now he's very much getting away from that and realize, that, well, we got to build on youth, or we got to build on guys that are still in their prime and still, putting on a good show. And he's kind of gotten away from the circus sideshow stuff. And there's an audience for it, but are you going to build on that for the long term? No. So I think you're spot on with that. So, but anyways, well, taking up enough of your time, Raymond, the real deal Daniels, thank you so much for appearing and really being a good sport about talking about, your first MMA loss. It was really great in connecting with you. I very much appreciate it.
No problem at all. It was my pleasure. It's a great conversation. And I'm never shy to talk about life lessons.
All right, I want to thank my very special guest, Raymond the Real Deal Daniels, for taking the time to join me on Inside the Hexagon. It was great talking with him, hearing about his initial foray into MMA and everything else that we discussed. That was just so much fun, so I really enjoyed it. Hope that you really enjoyed it as well. Hope that you're also enjoying the other episodes that we've been putting out. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with the legend Frank Shamrock. This is the very first time that we're having a repeat guest on the show, and I can't think of somebody better to do that with than Frank. We talk about his very final fight in MMA, which was against Nick Diaz at Strikeforce Shamrock versus Diaz back in 2009. We break that fight down, talk about the promotion leading up to it, the aftermath, and of course, talking about what happened in the cage during the from bell to bell. So it's a great conversation. Hope that you're looking forward to that. After that, we will be just breaking down the next Strikeforce event, which was Lawler versus Shields. That's a very interesting event. Some great fights on that card. Brett Rogers versus Andrei Arlovsky, Nick Diaz versus Scott Smith. Smith, and then of course Jake Shields versus Robbie Lawler. So lots to break down there. So we've got some great stuff coming down the pipeline. So make sure that you have subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you rate and review. But with that, we're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. Hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy. We'll see you soon.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, cut.
Well, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.